Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast, featuring comic book, movie, and video game news and reviews. And now your hosts, AJ and Martin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 116 of the Panelcast. This is AJ, and I'm here this week with Martin.
Hi, guys.
This week's episode, we're going to be catching up on some of the news that has passed us by recently. I will be talking about some of the comics I've been reading, including Guardians of the Galaxy, which is, I'll get into more detail about that. Martin's going to be talking about his experiences at E3. All that and more after we come back from our first commercial break.
Hi, this is Vanessa with Blackbird Bows, inviting you to visit my website at blackbirdbows.com, where you can find 100% original and customized bows for every occasion. That's blackbirdbows.com.
And we're back. Well, let's start off with the news. Martin, what do you got for us?
There is a... Well, I guess not really a rumor anymore. They've officially hired someone to come on and write a Knight Rider movie to the big screen, which, if you were at Comic-Con last year, was a huge thing because they released a kit Hot Wheels car, and they had David Hasselhoff show up, and he didn't need a cheeseburger off the ground. He actually... was pretty cool, got the audience pumped up and stuff, and so it showed there was a lot of fandom for it. So it'll be interesting to see what this movie's going to do. Do they modernize it? Do they put it back in the 80s, which I personally think would be cool? Where do you
do they 21 Jump Street?
Right. Do you 21 Jump Street? There's so many options with it. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. And I would really like to see an announcement at Comic-Con this year. I think just to see, you know, here's our star, here's what we're going to do with the car, here's some concept art for the car kind of thing.
Well, I've got some updates on that as well. Apparently, it's Brad Copeland that's writing it, who wrote Wild Hogs and Arrested Development. So what it seems like, what they're trying to aim for, is a Fast and Furious-style franchise cash cow with some comedic moments inside. I don't know how that's going to play out. You think they would have learned from the TV reboot that just failed, didn't even finish its first season, which I blame Val Kilmer for having Batman voice kit just didn't work out for them. But, yeah, I would have thought that they would have learned by now, and I thought Knight Rider would be a dead horse, you know. Maybe if they do a little flashback to the original, it might be kind of cool, but...
Or have, like, David Hasselhoff maybe cameo, you know, as the head of Knight Industries now, or something like that. Just something that comes up, I think, that...
To tie it all together?
You've gotta think it... The concept of the show, the TV show they recently did in 2008, was really good. It was actually... It had a potential. I think it was just the way they did it and the amount of money they were putting into a show like that, it didn't work. Maybe it would have worked as a movie or a television movie. So...
When they did the TV show, they kind of stole the idea of the revamp of Quantum Leap. And where David Hasselhoff's kid was searching for his dad,
right.
Which is what they wanted to do for Quantum Leap, have his daughter searching for him, hopping through time. But it just, I think the way they had the car morph, kind of like Turbo Teen back in the day, they could take on any shape or form, I think that kind of overdid it.
Right. I think they overly modernized the car in that show, plus they used the Mustang, which I still think was wrong too. The Camaro had just come out, and yeah, Transformers had just used it, but... Still would have been cool to stick with the Camaro, I think, and to use that as kind of the...
Then it morphed into a truck.
Generation to generation kind of thing. You know, it's one of those franchises where there's a lot of potential for what they could do to bring it to a new generation. 21 Jump Street, it turns out they did a really good job bringing it to a new generation with Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. So, yeah, good luck to them. Good luck, Copeland. I definitely don't want another Wild Hogs, please.
No more overage naked guys in a pool.
No.
We already have that with Old Dog. No. Yeah, Old Dogs. The new Grown Up. Grown Ups Part 2 coming out.
Two.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Moving forward in news, this week saw the loss of somebody that was actually a big influence on my life as well as my writing, Richard Matheson. He was the author of I Am Legend, as well as The Incredible Shrinking Man, Somewhere in Time, Legend of Hell House, Comedy of Terror, Stir of Echoes, What Dreams May Come, The Box, and most recently, Real Steel. He passed away. They didn't give us a reason as to why. I'm guessing it's just natural causes. But, you know, he will be missed. He's a having read I Am Legend and then going from there to Max Brooks' World War Z heavily influenced my writing style as well as what I write now. So, big loss with him. Martin?
Next thing up is more news on X-Men Days of Future Past. They've actually cast Josh Hellman in the role, a secret role, which is funny to me because they're posting pictures from this movie every day, basically every day of shooting. So how are you keeping it all a secret? Like, who is he that they're going to keep this big secret that they need to? And if you've seen him, he's Josh Hellman, who he was from the Pacific, but he has a face to me that just seems like he's got to be an evil villain. He's, you know, the way his head's shaped, he's got a little bit bigger ears than normal, and just to me, throw some horns on him, some body makeup, make him some kind of bad guy. But it'll be interesting to see where they're
Velasco?
Going. Because they're going to be panning over so many generations, over so many eras of time, that they're going to be showing 70s, they're showing the X-Men in the 70s, they're going to be coming to the future a little bit, or I guess the future's coming back to the past. So we're seeing Hugh Jackman, Halle Berry, people like that come back and meet their younger selves, or not so younger selves.
Patrick Stewart meeting his counterpart.
While he still has hair, which is a weird question. I just watched the X-Men Origins, and, you know, Patrick Stewart was in that. So it'll be interesting to see how they play that time piece out, because these are all continuation movies. But they continue to add things to this movie. It will additionally still has Ian McKellen returning, Hugh Jackman, who did a cameo in the first one, coming back, Patrick Stewart, James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender, Jennifer Lawrence, Nicholas Hoult, Anna Paquin, Ellen Page, Sean Ashmore, Peter Dinklage, Omar Asari, Halle Berry, Daniel Cudmore, Fan Bing Bing, who is going to be my favorite member of the cast just because of the name, Evan Peters,
Bing Bing,
and in second place for cool names, Boo Boo Stewart. All of these people. Now, the one thing, they keep adding cast members to this, and he keeps talking, Bernstein keeps talking about involving everybody. They haven't officially announced anything from the Fox Comic-Con panels, but can you imagine this ensemble coming out on stage? In the past years, we've had things like Avengers, which was the big news. I don't see there being too much in terms of big news this year unless they surprise us with some sort of Justice League announcement, which is starting to become less and less likely as the summer goes on. So I think this will be one of the big panels this year, and we will see a lot of news come out about this movie and a lot of footage come out for this movie at Comic-Con. So keep a close eye on it, and we'll be reporting on it too from Comic-Con.
You would think that with X-Men Bryan Singer bringing in all those cast members in the last X-Men film, X-Men franchise film, and how badly it failed, and how, you know, you got split seconds of view of, like, Callisto and whatnot, all these other side characters, that he would have learned, you know, that unless you're giving these characters actual screen presence and time and lines of dialogue, that just filling in background scenery of cast members just isn't going to work. So I'm hoping that, you know, with such a huge cast, that they actually, we get to see more of them and have it develop more, and as opposed to just pictures of their faces on the poster, especially the big, you know, extinction poster that has been on the original cover and what they seem to be using for viral marketing now. We'll see. Speaking of which, we were talking about Justice League. Henry Cavill came out recently after Man of Steel and stated that he doesn't want Justice League to come out anytime soon. He's quoted as saying Justice League could be great if done correctly. It's a very tough one to do because the DC comic heroes are all godlike in their power. So in this real-world setting we're telling our story in, it's going to be tough to achieve that, and it has to be done very delicately with a lot of thought. So it won't be right away. I hope it's not anyway. And it may take some time in building up other movies and other characters and introducing them to getting in one way or another. I think it would be great to do, but I don't think it's around the corner. That's kind of cool. He's kind of taking the quarterback approach when it comes to the Justice League and DC movies, where he just wants everybody to rally around him and take charge. And if that's the case, and that's what he wants, and I'm cool for it. I'm not in any rush to see Justice League. And I agree that if they did it now, coming hot off the heels of Dark Knight and Man of Steel, which is odd considering, you know, we have two great movies that don't say the character name in any of them, but that they don't do it right, it's just going to look bad, and it'll drop the ball. But I think the impatience of the fans might be its overdoing, its undoing in that case.
I think too, as a joke, sort of, he wants it just to himself for a while, you know? It's already been talked about that they've already got the sequel in the works, and they would really like to go to production and get it out right away. It'd be interesting to see what they say about it when they're asked at Comic-Con in a couple weeks, as to, where is WB going with DC Comics movies? They have such a large cast of characters that they could use for movies, that they could do standalone films with, and we've heard talk of them doing spin-offs like Justice League Dark with Guillermo del Toro, who I'm sure is going to be immensely popular after this summer with Pacific Rim.
Shh, we don't talk about that movie here.
And we'll see, does he stick to it, and does he get to go make a Justice League Dark movie, and maybe that's what we see first? Does that take away from doing a Justice League movie? Henry Cavill has come out to be praised for his Superman, and the movie's doing really well box office-wise, even though it's a very busy summer in Hollywood. It did really well, and people are giving him a lot of credit for taking on that Superman role. He's also got a lot of the fangirls who will drop their panties the second he walks in a room. And so, for them to see a Superman 2 before Justice League, I don't think will hurt them at all. Won't upset any of them. And I'm wondering if that side of the fan base is what Warner Brothers is looking at versus the fanboys who are drooling for a Justice League movie to come back and take the reins away from the Avengers.
Yeah, what I find funny about this year's Comic-Con, it's one of the very first times we're going to a Comic-Con after the flux of superhero movies have come out. We've already seen Iron Man 3, Man of Steel. By the time this comes out, we'd have seen Pacific Rim.
The week of is RIPD and Red 2, which Red 2 is not really necessarily in the comic books so much anymore, but those are two comic book movies. The only really two big movies after that are Kick-Ass 2, which they're planning on showing screenings at Comic-Con, and Wolverine, which I have no doubt they're going to have a screening at Comic-Con too.
Right.
So, it's one of those years where we've got a whole year before something else big comes out. What's going to be the big story? I'm thinking X-Men Days of Future Past or The Hobbit. Those are the only two big things really to think about for the rest of the year.
Right, because they can't go in and show sneak peeks of Iron Man 3 or anything because it's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Kick-Ass 2, which I have another story on afterward, it's got hype, but it doesn't have the hype as any of these other big name movies.
It's not Avengers, it's not Marvel.
Right, and RIPD, I've read the book, and from what I've read of the book, the movie doesn't really tie into it too much as well. And Red 2 completely has nothing to do with the book.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's kind of weird.
We've got Thor 2 coming out. People don't seem as excited about it as something like Iron Man 3. Guardians of the Galaxy next year, which is barely into any sort of pre-production. Spider-Man, which is coming out next year, has wrapped production. And so maybe they'll have some footage. But again, that seems so far off. It doesn't seem big enough yet. It's not as big as Iron Man 3, like you were saying. And clips from Spider-Man 2 will not be as popular as if Robert Downey Jr. was on stage talking. So it's going to be a very interesting Comic-Con year.
What do you think Marvel's going to do for their big display this year?
That was another question I was pondering, too, because D23, Disney's own convention, is this year in Anaheim right after Comic-Con. And if history repeats itself, they're going to have a very limited presence. I wouldn't be surprised to see something from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as the Marvel booth space, maybe it's the S.H.I.E.L.D. cave or whatever their HQ they're going to call it, and it'll just be kind of low-key. It won't be anything major. And they're going to have a panel for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but what are they going to show? Are they going to show the episode, or are they going to save that for D23? Disney owns too much now.
It'd be nice to see maybe the deck of the helicarrier as the photo op place. Last year we saw the Iron Man armor room. Mm-hmm. Previously we'd seen Thor's throne room. Well, actually, we've seen Iron Man twice there.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see what kind of setup they have. Moving on, we mentioned Kick-Ass before. Well, the past couple of days, it's been getting a lot of press due to Jim Carrey trying to denounce his role in the film based on the Sandy Hook violent actions that had happened. I'm personally calling bullshit, but what's your thoughts on it?
So we've had a lot of discussion about this, you and I and a couple of our friends. It seems so weird that this is coming out now from him. I understand that if some point he got some kind of flack and he's reconsidering, there are people who reconsider their stance on things, but it's kind of weird to finish a movie and say, I want nothing, I don't want to be associated with anymore. Your face is on the poster.
Right, but you're one of the main selling points. He's one of the main reasons why there's rejuvenated interest in the film, because otherwise there was none. You know, everyone's like, oh, okay, Kick-Ass 2, whatever, the movie was great. But that's Jim Carrey is the big thing we hear in all the movies that we've been seeing that show the trailer.
Yeah.
The minute people realize that that's Jim Carrey, they're all about it.
Yeah.
So it's...
And it's really weird that this was going to be, I thought, a relaunch for him. You know, Dumb and Dumber 2 is finally going in further than it's been going. And so they're talking about him coming back for that. He's got other movies that he's been sought out for, doing voiceovers and things like that. At some one point in time, he was rumored to be part of Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's all these things for him. We're out there, all these opportunities, and then you go and take something like this. It would be one thing to say, you know, hey, there's a lot of violence in this film, and I you know, push for that to be a side marketing ploy of the movie, maybe. But you're not going to do press junkets. You're not, you know, if I was Mark Miller, I would just print new posters. It's not that hard these days to just put new posters out there and just, fine, he doesn't want to be part of it, that's cool. His name's on the poster at the bottom in a little paragraph, and he'll be in the movie, that's great. We can just forget about him, let's talk about everything else. You know, Kick-Ass 3, the comic book's about ready to come out.
Right.
So we have a possibility for a third film, possibly a fourth film, according to Mark Miller comments and John Romita Jr.'s comments earlier this week.
Well, actually, I have some of the quotes here that I can read off to everybody. First off is Carrie's Twitter. I did Kick-Ass 2 a month before Sandy Hook, and now in all good conscience, I cannot support that level of violence. My apologies to others involved with the film. I am not ashamed of it, but recent events have caused me to change my heart. Millar's response is this. I'm baffled by this sudden announcement, as nothing seen in this picture wasn't in the screenplay 18 months ago. Yes, the body count is very high, but a movie called Kick-Ass 2 really has to do what it says on the tin. A sequel to the picture that gave us Hit Girl was always going to have some blood on the floor, and this should have been no shock to a guy who enjoyed the first movie so much. My books are very hardcore, but the movies are adapted for a more mainstream audience, and if you love the tone of the first picture, you're going to eat this up with a big giant spoon. Like Jim, I am horrified by the real-life violence, even though I'm Scottish, but Kick-Ass 2 isn't a documentary. No actors were harmed in the making of this production. This is fiction, and like Tarantino and Peckinpah, Scorsese and Eastwood, John Borman, Oliver Stone, and Chan-Wook Park, Kick-Ass avoids the usual bloodless body count of most big summer pictures and focuses instead on the consequences of violence, whether it's ramifications for friends or family, or as we saw in the first movie, Kick-Ass spending 6 months in the hospital after his first street altercation. Ironically, Jim's character in Kick-Ass 2 is a born-again Christian, and the big deal we made of the fact that he refuses to fire a gun is something he told us attracted him to the role in the first place, end quote. So there you go, Millar defending his movie, and but what's funny is nowhere does it mention the fact that Carrey sought after the role. He went and auditioned for it, he went and pleaded to have this role, because he wanted something out of the norm of what he's normally acting, and because he enjoyed the movie so much. So he's eating his own words at this point.
The other thing I find interesting is the timing on it. So, yes, he did this a month before Sandy Hook, so yeah, that'll affect you. Sandy Hook was in December 2012. I'll give you a month afterwards to kind of start being like, ooh, maybe I shouldn't be doing violent films. Why come out a month before the movie's going to come out and say, I can't support this anymore? You know, what was it at this point in time versus 3 months ago, 2 months ago? You know, they've been holding vigils. They've had all kinds of stuff for that Sandy Hook travesty, and then he's just now coming out.
And what's amusing to me is there's pictures of him on stage at a concert in Kick-Ass's uniform after Sandy Hook has happened. So, to me, again, it just feels like a big publicity stunt for him. Who knows? Maybe he could be feeling some remorse, and that's cool, but he's making a big deal. And maybe the internet is blowing it up a little bit more than it should have, but after all this has come out, he has still yet to come out and say anything after the fact. After Millar has made his statement, after the backlash online, all that stuff. It's been a few days that this has been out. He has yet to come out and say anything in response to it. Like, you know, hey, guys, maybe you're right, blah, 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 or, you know, I don't regret doing the movie. It's just, you know, I just want people to know that I don't believe in this in real life. Or something, you know, but he doesn't do anything like that. He's just sitting back and enjoying the attention he's getting. It's what it feels like to me, anyway.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else?
No, I was good on that one.
I had a couple quick things. The Hobbit is coming out. The second one is coming out at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So recently was released a new collector's cover for The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, which the latest issue of Empire boasts details on. And we're going to get an extended edition of First Hobbit, because apparently 3 hours wasn't enough. He's putting things in the extended cut that are going to go play straight into the second film, including the character of Girion, who is defending the city of Dale. He's going to make an appearance. More Smaug. The explanation of the black arrows of what that's being used against Smaug. And you also see that there are issues with the King of Elves. And we're going to see the singing of Brad Humphrey's Great Goblin. He actually has a song in the book, and they're actually going to show that. And you're also going to see some dwarvish disrespect of the elves at Rivendell, so I'm guessing some shit went down that they cut out of the original film.
I would assume they'd have to cut it out, but do you think we'll see this in theaters before the second part comes out?
My understanding is it'll be out like a couple weeks beforehand, so we'll have time to watch it and then go. I hope so anyway, because that'll be a good, you know, movies at the clubhouse night.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other thing is Sony and Microsoft have announced their release dates for their respective game consoles.
Yay!
PlayStation 4 will be out on November 13th, and the Xbox One will be out on November 27th.
Woo!
Funny that November 27th is the day before Thanksgiving, which means I guess they're not expecting a lot of sales at the release date, because a lot of people will be saving their money for Black Friday 2 days later. Sony, on the other hand, I think it's still a mistake to release on that date, because that gives people 2 weeks to wait for Black Friday deals. However, 2 weeks before Black Friday, I mean, you're not going to get much of more of a deal. What are they going to do? Lower it $5, you know? They've got to make their money back. They should release these things on Black Friday, because people will already be in line for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just personally my
opinion.
Release
it that day and then do the accessories, like a controller or a game as part of the come. There are so many games out there that they should not be charging $60 for, that they probably make charge $5 to make it and then charge us $60 for it. Give one of those out on Black Friday as part of the deal.
Right.
I find the dates interesting, as the I'm somebody who reserved both systems online, and so now I've got 2 weeks between the two systems to get them and pay for them. So that's a pretty expensive November for me.
But it also gives you 2 weeks to enjoy one
mm-hmm.
before the other one comes out, and you can make comparisons. And it also gives Microsoft time to go, okay, so let's hear about their complaints about Sony for 2 weeks and make the adjustments in our system, which is what Sony did with Microsoft at E3. So I personally would say, you know what, if the systems are coming out on Black Friday, cool. Let them come out in October. Let's have some time to play with them, and then make video games and accessories, like you said, cheaper on Black Friday, because mm-hmm. you're going to see those flying off the shelves, you know. But everyone, for all of us that have been gaming all this time and have been getting fresh releases of consoles, everybody knows not to buy it day one. Everybody knows, because the glitches aren't hammered out yet.
Mm-hmm.
So to take a good estimation of what the system can do, it's going to take a couple weeks of them hearing complaints and updating the firmware and the system and everything, the programming, before you actually get the smooth sailing system. So, you know, still going to wait till Christmas or Black Friday, either way.
Yeah, and I don't think that we're going to see problems with orders. We know that pre-orders already sold out. GameStop, Amazon have stopped day one orders. You can get standard orders, which will come a couple weeks after whenever they get stock replenished. And so we know that places are going to sell out, but I don't think it's going to be so hard that you couldn't get one by Christmas or the week after Christmas.
And if they're smart at all and if they've learned anything from their previous releases, that they should really overstock every store that they're making it available to.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to piss off some angry gamers again.
Right.
You know, because that's what they did with the PS3, the Xbox 360 when it first came out. They ran out of stock.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to pre-plan for this, especially with Black Friday coming up.
It seems like they're on their ball with the pricing. Because when those last consoles came out, the pricing ended up dropping a little bit later. So it seems like they got on the ball with that. So hopefully they got on the ball with the inventory and the distribution. I still think that November is going to be odd. I know Microsoft wants this to be the family living room entertainment system. So maybe the idea is you set it up before Thanksgiving, and by the time family gets there, it's up and running and working. And like
and
you said,
by Christmas, they have all the bugs worked out, and it's the perfect entertainment system.
They'll get these bugs working, and then it'll become the family holiday system. Whereas the PS4, I see more as I'm going to take it out of the box and hide in my basement and play it away from family members and people for a long period of time.
So my house. And Richard's house, who just walked in.
Yeah, or the clubhouse. And we'll hide here and lock the doors for a week. But yeah, it seems like maybe that was the idea, that they're going to have it there in time for the holidays. So that for all the gatherings coming up, it will become a thing and it'll get marketed. So that those people who do wait, the non-early adopters who wait for the beginning of the year, are going to see all how great everyone's doing before the new year. And then January, they'll go out and buy it with the update.
What kind of presents do you think we're going to see at Comic-Con?
I actually think we will see them pretty heavily. Games like Mad Max, the new Batman Arkham Origins is coming out later this year. Whether or not they're going to play all these on the PS4 and the Xbox One will be interesting to see. The map just came out today for the exhibit hall floor at Comic-Con, and the entire section, they have their two little corners again. So what are they going to do in the video gaming section? Are they going to show games that are coming out this year that are playable on the PS3, or are they going to have the 2014 games that are coming out for the new consoles next year for us to play?
It'll be interesting to see if the hotels that host the gaming competitions and whatnot, if they actually have any of the events releases of the systems for people to play, because it's going to be crazy down there if it is.
Same thing for Nerd Machine. Microsoft's one of their co-sponsors, and they're taking over the entire park area of Petco Park, the Padres Stadium, and so they have a lot more room this year to put in Xbox systems, which they've done for the last 2 years. What are they going to do this year? Are they going to have the Xbox One? I can't imagine they wouldn't. At least one console that they can show off and play with on stage with Microsoft.
And people screaming from the background, Xbox, shut off, Xbox, porn, Xbox, naked pictures.
Exactly. So it'll be cool to see what we do end up with there. But after a week at E3, I can still wait till November.
And speaking of which, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Martin about his experiences at E3.
Hey, this is Andrea from Andrea's Gaming Lounge. Make sure you take a look every day, several times a day, at ForbiddenPanel.com to check out all the greatest gaming news and reviews.
And we're back. During the break, we've been joined by Mr. Richard Duran of Cricket Smile Art. Hi, Richard.
How's it going?
Oh, you should ask Richard first.
Looking at your weird straw.
Richard, are you going for a new video game console this fall, and if so, which one?
You mean, have I already pre-ordered my Xbox One? Yes, as a matter of fact, I have.
Okay. And is there a reason that you went Xbox One over PS4, other than you're just, I know you're a Halo fan, you and I share that, but we have the Sony whore over here.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm an Xbox loyalist, always have been. It's just the way it is. Like I said, up until, what was it, a few months ago, I had my PS3 was doing nothing but collecting dust. So I've always been an Xbox loyalist, and all the issues that they said before about it, that they've all miraculously, that nobody was shocked, changed, didn't bother me, because I have internet. I pay my bill, so it doesn't go down. So I don't worry about that,
But they changed all that.
Yeah. So
to touch on that, basically going into the opening of E3, Xbox came out and said you were going to have your system check in online once every 24 hours to be able to play games online or even offline, that there was going to be no used games allowed on the system. You couldn't trade games that your friends could buy, used games, all of that. Sony waited until Xbox finished their press conference and said the exact opposite of everything else.
That video was fantastic that they made of it, where, we're going to explain how this works. And they just pass over the game to the other guy. There you go!
Yeah, it was a complete mockery of what Xbox did they did their press conference going into E3, not at E3. And Sony came out and debuted their console at E3, which I still think was a thing to see what kind of box they were going to use for the new PS4. I think they had three or four designs in their pocket, and they were waiting to see which one was going to look best compared to Xbox's new one.
Xbox's beta fucking
Xbox,
Betamax,
right?
Video.
Looks like an 80s VCR.
Looks like a Betamax is what it looks like.
And it's going to take up way too much space on my entertainment stand. So,
you're not getting the Xbox entertainment stand?
No. I'm not getting the Xbox entertainment stand. I'm going to be paying enough money for the Xbox, and then 2 weeks later the PS4, apparently.
No, so. PS4 first, and then Xbox.
Either way, it's going to be a lot of money that month.
That's why you pre-order.
So you guys, for Christmas, I'm going to make you chocolate chip cookies. Sorry. Anyways, E3, so I was at E3 while all this circus was going on. I had an exhibitor hall only pass, which was close enough. You didn't need to be in the panel rooms to see that Xbox and PlayStation were there to compete and to show off what they were bringing. And they both had very large booths at the Los Angeles Convention Center that spanned the entire width of the floor, which was really cool. I've never been to a convention like this. It was my first time going, and it's an industry convention versus a fan convention. So industry convention, you know, it's not like Comic-Con in San Diego. It's not things like that. It's the behind-the-scenes kind of stuff, and people who are developers are walking around talking code and things like that. So it was really cool to attend and check it out. And just to see the different side of it. You know, I've been to a video game fan convention. It's crazy. You know, you're in line for 4 or 5 hours to try and play a game. There's not a lot of, like, free code, game codes, free swag, free t-shirts, and things like that. There's lines, and there's panels. E3 is a lot like that. They do have panels, but they kind of break it up, and they have an exhibit hall only area. The exhibit hall is actually 2 exhibit halls. Everybody was out there. Nintendo, PlayStation, and Sony, and then Microsoft and Xbox. We saw game websites out there. There were mobile apps out there, and then there was every accessory company you could think of for video gaming, which was really cool. And over the course of 3 days, walking back and forth, we still stood in line for 2 or 3 hours because this convention has gotten pretty popular to play games, to check out things, and to see some of the new products that were coming out. We didn't get to play any of the new Sony PS4s. We did get to play on the Xbox One. I played this game called Project Spark, which looks a lot like what's the little Sackboy game? Little Big Planet? It was basically a ripoff of Little Big Planet for Microsoft.
I always make you think of Little Big Man with Dustin Hoffman.
So it was...
Sorry, the name. It's just the name.
Yeah. The game was basically...
Wow.
Build your own world, and then your friends come in and you play it, and there's adventures and things you can set up. But the controls are really easy to use. It was cool how it had the camera system built in to the game for you, so you're creating a world and you want to, like, erase something, you swipe your hand, you know, and it takes it off. You don't have to be hitting the back button on your controller and things like that. So they've integrated a lot on Xbox One where you can use the controller and the camera at the same time. Nobody was in the background yelling, shut it off, or stuff like that, which I was waiting for. I was hoping for. So,
sorry.
It was AJ's checking out some E3 goodies, too, while we're sitting here.
Dear Schwab!
And then the PlayStation 4, it was a lot of demos and lines to watch more demos for it, but we didn't get to actually put our hands on it. We got to see it. They were both, the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, were displayed like the family jewels in London. Like, it was a weird, like, pedestal thing with a big bright light coming up underneath it.
Richard and I are both refraining from commenting on your family jewels.
Family jewels would be testicles.
Royalty,
crown jewels.
Yeah, crown jewels. They're all the royal family jewels, you know.
Here's the Xbox One. Long and flappy.
Yeah. But it was just interesting. It was almost like they didn't want you to take pictures of it. All of my pictures came out really poor because of the bright light coming from underneath it, and there was no lights going into the box. And some photographers got creative and had, like, their camera flashlight out in shining in the box so they could take pictures of the system. But they both look like large VCRs up close.
Yeah.
And
doesn't necessarily mean that's what the file is going to look like.
Yeah. So I'm sure
or the slim version,
That'll come out. So they both could stand up, you know, on their side too, which may take up less space. But I'm thinking of a flat panel TV stand where they're going to lay flat.
You know, we live in California. Earthquakes. The last thing I want is for my $400 gaming system to flop over and break.
Yeah. So overall, it was a really cool convention, really big convention. The quick highlights that I can throw out there was Batman Arkham Origins looks really cool. Most of the footage they showed we've already seen in the trailers that are online. Disney Infinity was one of the big stars of the weekend. They did they were giving out little character players that are going to be these. They have a chip in them, and that's where the game's located. And you're going to place it on a little pad depending on what system you have. And if you have the Lone Ranger and Tonto set, you're going to set that pad up, and then it's going to be the Lone Ranger world. And you do all these racing games, build-your-own-world, adventure games, fighting games, everything you can think of with the
cool
entire Disney Pixar cast of characters. And they're going to continuously expand it. There was a scene where
They had a Vanellope from Wreck-It Ralph steal Mr. Incredible's car and go for a joyride in Incredible World. And the Tron Legacy vehicles are in it, so I'm sure there's going to be light cycle races at some point in time and things like that. So that one was a huge breakout star. And I actually was
for
there.
Xbox?
It's going to be for all systems, including PC. And what they're saying is it's a universal platform that you set these characters on that reads the chip. So I don't know if that means they're all going to plug into a USB and that's how it's going to work. But it's coming out in August. And so they were giving away the figures. You can't even play the game yet. You just have a figure for right now until August. But when the platform comes out, it's for any system. And they debuted it on every system there while you could play it. And it totally open world. I mean, you can keep adding different characters, different worlds, different pieces to it.
So it's Disney's version of WoW.
Yeah. And for the most part, it is going to be as big as WoW. I mean, they can continuously add new characters. I'm waiting for the Marvel line to be announced or the Star Wars line to be announced to be added to it, because it'll be huge. And then these characters all cross into each other's worlds, depending on what game you want
to
play.
Sounds like more Legos we have to buy. You already said AJ's freaking kryptonite with words open world.
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing. So that's what worried me about.
That is my game. I got to go.
I was really concerned about this game. First, the first thing they said when we walked up is we're gearing this towards mothers and daughters. Like, all right, I'm going to go get in line for my free figure and screw you guys. And then sat in line for an hour and a half to get the little toy. And watching the gameplay and listening to just some of the descriptions that are going to be coming up with it, and the developers were there in line with us as we're kind of going through their booth talking to us about it, it really does have a lot of potential for just non-open world versus, like, it could be open world, but you could just set it up as a racing game, like you want to do Mario Kart Racing but with Disney characters, and you build your own race course, or you use the race courses that are involved in it. So it was really cool. Like, they have some closed-ended pieces to it too. And the fighting games, who doesn't want to put Stitch up against, like, Captain Barbosa or things like that? I mean, just random characters that you can combine and fight. And then everyone's weapons are interchangeable. Anybody can have Buzz Lightyear's wings and things like that. So it's definitely, not the level of Mortal Kombat and fatalities fighting game, but
Stitch for the time.
Still kind of fun. So that was a really cool game. And then, of course, things like Assassin's Creed, the 4 coming out later this year. Destiny had a booth where it was all closed in. All of these booths have, like, walls around them. You go into these secret little rooms, and they close the door, and then they show you a demo. And then the 20 of you come out, and they let 20 more in. It was a 6-hour line for Destiny and for Call of Duty Ghosts. And they capped it off every day. And every day we walk back over, and be like, is it open back up? Oh, we might open in an hour. We walk back in an hour, it still wasn't open. So we didn't get to sit in and watch the demos, but we did get to watch the public trailer that they had out that most of us have already seen. Very popular, very cool looking up close and personal.
Destiny looks amazing.
Yeah, Destiny is going to be a huge game. And of course, Call of Duty Ghosts already has its fans. And
Destiny's Bungie, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then over at the Microsoft, the only thing they were promoting for Halo so far, we know there's a new Halo game coming, but for right now, the only thing they're pushing is Spartan Assault, which is their mobile game, which will only be available on Windows devices. So you can't get it on an iPhone, you can't get it on an Android.
Watch me.
And they are trying to push it as sales with the tablets and the phones, not just
the Surface.
So that was kind of interesting. But they did have basically a new Halo game that they could push, which was really cool. And then, of course, they had games like Need for Speed was out there with new cars. They had actual cars out there. Gran Turismo 6 had the Corvette that was made famous sort of in The Last Stand with Arnold Schwarzenegger last January. That black cell
B1.
They had it on display on the floor, which was really cool to see. My favorite game, and totally had heard nothing about it, walked by and almost laughed when I saw the sign for it, was Mad Max. There's a movie coming out next year with Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm. Reboot.
They've rebooted the franchise and coming out. This game has nothing to do with that. They're going back to
old school
Mad Max. Mad Max has lost his car, the Interceptor, and he's now got to create a new car. It is open world. You're going to be going out and you're going to be hunting down pieces to build your car up, to go through, and the game changes as you're building your car. So you add off-road tires to your car, it completely screws up all the sinks and things you're used to in the car, so you got to relearn how to drive the car every time. There's fighting, there's the shooting parts of the game. It has several different layers to it as a game. It looks like it's got a very clear path you got to get to, but not a straight line. You're going to be going off and checking out different areas, and the world expands on the continent. So they have, it looks like 5 locked zones. They only showed us a little demo piece that they had opened so far. But it's going to grow as the game gets out there. And then things I think that'll come along with it, it looks like, are racing games where you'll race other cars in the game to try and win a part or things like that too. So it's really cool. The one downside to the Mad Max whole piece of it was he doesn't speak Australian. He's English or American now. So I lost the accent, which was kind of saddening. But overall, it still looked really cool, and it was the old school. And so I think it'd be awesome if they could get the game out and build some hype up before the movie comes out. I don't know that they could do it after the movie comes out and have that continue to carry on, especially if the movie tanks. You know.
So they don't want a defiance on their hands.
Right. And it's being done by two different companies. So, you know, the movie has nothing to do with the video game, vice versa. So,
is the movie a reboot of Mad Max or Road Warrior?
Mad Max.
So, Tom Hardy.
Expanded.
And it's, you know, vehicles, they've already shown vehicles and stuff in the movie that look really cool. And the video game, same thing. They showed a lot of the vehicles that we all know and remember from the movie are going to be in the game. And out of nowhere, I hadn't heard anything about this movie or this game. I'd heard all about the movie, so to see that at E3 was really cool and was surprising to a lot of people who were walking up and watching this demo. And they had us sit in like an old military tent to watch it, and it looked all deserted out while we were sitting there. So it was really cool, the decor that goes into these booths. It's not just lame like you know, curtained walls and a table with some stuff on it. Like, you actually go into some really nice,
like the adult booth at the shrine.
Yeah. So anyway. Wow.
Justin goes all the time. He tells me about it.
Yeah, we'll go with that story.
Yeah.
So, E3...
And the hobby pictures ended up on my phone.
E3 also expanded to the outside and was having areas where, like, the Ouya system, which was the small Android-based video game system that was not... it's not tied to, like, PlayStation, Sony, any of those kind of things. It's all going to be open to developers, and they can design their own games. So... it just hit stores this week and already sold out on Amazon and GameStop. That was the one we tried to get. So they had a parking lot that they rented across from the convention center because they didn't get booth space. And so they rented a parking lot, put a huge orange trailer up that had the Ouya logo on it, and it faced the convention center. So you could see it when you were walking around outside the convention center. And everyone walks around outside because you had to get between the two exhibit halls. So they set that up. They had the Tune.in mobile app there for download your radio stations to your phone, and then a food truck. And the food truck, everything was $3. And on the bottom of certain bowls of the food truck food was a free Ouya. And so everyone was just in line all day, every day, trying to win them, which was really cool. And they were passing out koozies, and they had chairs and umbrellas out and stuff like that, and drinks for people to hang out in. EA got wind of it, parked a semi-truck in front of their trailer to block their logo so that people couldn't see it while they were walking around the outside of E3. So Ouya had to get a banner by the second day and had placed it up on the club that was right there at the parking lot so you could still see where it was at and sending people out there. But it was kind of cool to see that there were still kind of the outside. You didn't have to be indoors the whole time, you know, which I think is the thing about video games. You stay indoors. So it was kind of cool to see stuff going on outside. Crave Online, the website, had a booth outside that they were promoting Falling Skies. And they had a couple of the PlayStation 3s with Marvel and DC games, and we're doing a Marvel versus DC thing. So that was cool. And then SpaceX, the private space exploration company, was there with their Dragon capsule that had actually just came back from the space station on display. We're giving out t-shirts and waters and posters and things like that. So it was really cool. And then Guillermo del Toro stopped by to the SpaceX, next door to the SpaceX booth, to the Qualcomm booth, and hung out and talked a little bit about Pacific Rim and showed footage that had never been seen before, even though I saw it at Comic-Con in July last year.
Not saying anything on Pacific Rim anymore.
Sorry. But he's still as giddy as a school kid when he talks about the movie. So that was fun. And overall, it was just a really cool experience. I definitely want to go back next year and hope to keep covering that con. It's way different than going to a fan convention. And they just seem to respect the attendees a little bit more at these
shows. In comparison to Comic-Con, which do you prefer?
based on the amount of swag I came back with, E3. They just seem to, it's obviously a different crowd, and you pay a lot of money just to walk the exhibit hall floor. I mean, if Comic-Con opened up a $25 pass just to walk the exhibit hall floor, you know, swag would go way down, even worse than it already has in the last couple of years. So, you know, you pay for what you get walking around there. But, I mean, I came out of there with a controller for my mobile phone for free, two of them, actually, and then came out with backpacks, T-shirts, and it's not, you know, oh, we only have extra larges. You, like, went through, you checked out their game, they handed you a T-shirt for their game in your size. Mad Max, they gave us a water bottle, which I thought was funny. The World...
they didn't give you a German Shepherd?
Yeah. The War Gaming games, the World of Tanks, World of Planes, they were handing out mice. Alienware was handing out these huge 17-inch mouse pads. I mean, just really cool, interesting stuff at all these booths, and they really were trying to promote it. Disney Infinity, they gave out the figures for the games, and then if you waited in line for another hour and a half, they made you a custom shirt where you picked a character from the game, and they came back 2 hours later, and they screen printed it right there in your size, and then you had a choice from a hoodie, baseball tee, or a T-shirt. Things like that. It was just, they give you your money's worth to attend this show, and you learn a lot, too. I mean, I was talking to game developers and game accessory developers about things like mobile gaming and where that's going, and to learn about that was really cool. The video game that controller that we came out of there with was from MOGA, M-O-G-A company, and there will be a review up soon. I'm still trying out about four or five of the games that they have. They have a ton of free games you download that you play with this controller.
Which, if you go to Verizon right now, they're selling for $60.
Yeah, and I mean, we walked away with this thing, and...
And none from Iconia.
They have all kinds of games, they have all kinds of accessories that tie into these things, and just to listen to them talk about what they've seen in terms of mobile gaming and how that's expanded, things like the Ouya system, which is a little tiny, maybe 3-inch by 3-inch cube thing that you carry with your friend's house with the remote and just play your games anywhere you go, that there's a Wi-Fi connection. I mean, like, stuff like this, gaming is becoming a thing where you don't want to carry around a Betamax-looking console. You know, you can't play, obviously, you know, at the time you couldn't play offline and systems like that. You couldn't use used games and you had to buy these expensive $60 games. Why would you do that when you could buy an Ouya for $99 and download a ton of free games?
That was the great thing about the GameCube. It was designed for transport.
Yeah.
You know, it even had the big handle on the back, so I loved carting that thing around.
Right. And we've been doing LAN parties where, I mean, look how much trouble it is for us to bring, I mean, flat panel TV is a different story, but to bring the PlayStations down here and to hook all the PlayStations up and to get that running and get it going. I mean, it's just, it's work. It's
right.
Not something that's easy. Whereas if we had Call of Duty on the Ouya system and we all carry in our a little pocket bag or whatever, the Ouya thing would be super awesome. Or like the MOGA controller, what I like is it fits in my pockets. It's smaller than my phone. I have a Samsung Galaxy S3 and that thing is smaller than my phone. Fits in my pocket. Plays for hours on AAA batteries and I can battle with friends on these games. These games play across the internet or play across the Bluetooth connection. There's a wide variety of games, everything from, there's something called Battle Bears, which is a shooting game dressed as teddy bears. There's a zombie fighting game called Dead Triggers. There's racing games galore. There's an airplane game. They're coming out with a tank game. The girlfriend Vanessa found a Dress Girls Up game on there. That like
sure
you can,
she did.
Yeah. Okay, it was really neat. yeah, but I mean, like, it's just a complete random list of games, and it meets everybody's needs for what they're looking for, what fans want, and that was really cool. And that's where mobile gaming is going. The Halo Spartan Assault, I sat there for 3 or 4 tries to get T-shirts, posters, and stuff for us because I mean, it was fun playing. Like, they're like, oh, okay, you're done with that. Well, can I finish the level? Oh yeah, go ahead. Like. You know, I mean, like, they were doing point contests, and people were just sitting there playing it, and they were really enjoying it, versus the same one that was same amount of time to play Project Spark or to play Gran Turismo 5 or 6. Like, to play these other games, people were spending just as much time to play mobile gaming and were having more fun doing it and seemed like they were more into it. PS Vita, tons of games coming out for that thing that are really random, and then there's things like Batman Arkham Origins, which has a tie-in game called Blackgate. Had a lot of fun playing that, and again, the mobile gaming system, you know, it's something that can tie in with your game on your PS4, but when I want to leave the house, how do I keep playing it? I'm going to have to do something like the Vita. So, I think mobile gaming is where we're going to see a lot of growth and expansion this year, and I think we're going to see a lot more games, bigger games, coming to tablets and phones. And
so, which I think is what Microsoft is trying to make up for in their lack of a handheld game, just incorporating into their services in the Windows Phone.
so that way they can do without a Vita or Wii U or whatever.
Yeah, don't build the hardware, yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, Nintendo didn't really have long lines to try out their games. They had long lines to win swag, where you waited in line for 3 hours to win a small plushy Bob-omb or things like that. But for the most part, the Wii U games that they had out there, people were coming up and playing them, but there wasn't as much fervor there versus PlayStation 4 and Halo, or Microsoft Xbox One. So it was overall very, very packed, but easy to maneuver around compared to the San Diego Comic-Con, and compared to PAX East. PAX East PAX West is really crazy, the two video game conventions. Compared to this, I mean, there was a lot of people, but spread out over two convention halls, so you can move around really easily in there. So, yeah, we do have a pile of swag that I brought back that I saved specifically. For listeners, we'll have to come up with a way to give it away. So, we'll think that one over, but make sure you're tuning into the panel cast, and we'll announce it shortly.
Well, actually, we'll probably give it away maybe during one of both of our podcasts, so...
Yes.
Listeners, we'll do a two-parter.
Ooh.
We'll do a two-part trivia.
Two code words or something, yeah.
Right, and if you have both of them, the first five to get it to us, then go from there.
Yeah.
But you'll have to listen to both podcasts. That's just off the top of my head, Brian.
I think I like that. So make sure you're checking out Panelcast and the Midnight Movie Maniacs podcast to make sure you get both words, and we'll set it up soon.
Okay. Well, thanks, Martin, for going to E3 without us and rubbing it in our faces during this podcast.
Right? I hope you liked your gifts. Jeez, I left you hanging.
Appreciate the gifts. They were really pretty. When the mind of the MOGA.
Oh, we tried so many times to get more of them. The contest to get the MOGA, my friend Jose and I went to the show. We had to stand back to back, which was weird enough already, outside of the convention center. And they videotaped us playing dead triggers. We each had a system in our hand, and we had to switch it around our back. And at first, I was like, are you serious? Like, we're going to drop your iPhones that are hooked up to this thing. Oh, no, don't worry about it. And so, like, sat there for a minute and passed the controllers around our backs to each other and kept playing. And we're sitting there, and I'm sure the video will come up soon. If we find it, we'll post it. But I'm like, hey, how the hell did you get a chainsaw? Blah, and I kept playing, and like, passed along, and... So it was kind of cool how they were making people do it, too. It wasn't like you just walked up and got one, too. They actually put some effort into it and had fun with it, which was cool. So if they would have let us keep playing, I would have came home with a pile of them for you and our fans.
Mostly me.
I'll post an article on ForbiddenPanel.com after I play a couple more of the games of a review of the controller. But the MOGA really has something going right now, and they're getting ready to release shortly, probably late this year, early next year, a controller that'll charge your phone while you're playing. So I think that's awesome.
That'd be really cool. All right, well, why don't we go ahead and take this opportunity to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some comics.
Hey, everybody. This is Lou Guevara, and I invite you to take a look at my stuff at ForbiddenPanel.com, and you can also hit me up on Facebook at RipsComics@Facebook.com, and you can take a look at my blog spot at RipsComics@Blogspot.com, and I hope to see you guys there.
And welcome back to the panelcast. So in this clip, since nobody else read anything, I'm going to talk about the books I've read and hopefully spark some conversation with everybody.
Yay, conversation!
Released out today was the new Superman Batman comic book, which I picked up and read, basically depicting the meeting between Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent and that formation. I did not like it. It was very, I'm not familiar with the New 52 storyline or why these origins are the way they are, but just from the get-go, seeing Superman in short sleeves and jeans kind of bothered me, and Batman having his cloak, his cape was rocket-powered, Catwoman being as sadistic as she was, granted, I mean, the whole story is about a possession. How there's this villain possessing all these supervillains and superheroes, and gets a body jumper, and so it takes over Catwoman, and then eventually jumps into Clark Kent, and he ends up fighting with Bruce Wayne. So it's I don't know how I feel about it. The art style is a little too fluid for me, a little too many skinny lines that bow out really long, you know. So I wasn't too happy with that, but I like the variant covers, especially. Jim Lee's variant cover. That was pretty awesome. Story-wise, though, I don't know if I'm too interested. I may give it a couple more issues. It felt really short to me, but you know, I'll see where it goes from there.
Now, compared to things like so the new DC 52, you see him in shorts and jeans, or short-sleeve shirt and jeans, which means he's the Action Comics version of Superman Clark Kent, which is 5 years before the Superman comic book from the new DC 52. So that's interesting. But did it seem, when they first announced this, it sounded like it was going to be another Batman Earth 1 to me. This is just, we know we have some commercial success with these kind of books, so let's just put it out there.
It feels like a new continuity relaunch. That's what it felt like. And again, I'm not too familiar with the new 52. I know old school beforehand, so I couldn't really relate, having not read any of the 52s or anything like that, so I really couldn't get behind it. The Clark Kent character, just as Clark Kent, felt too forceful and too overbearing, while Bruce Wayne was trying to be more laid back. He was undercover as one of his many personalities and trying to maintain that, while Clark Kent is like, no, you're Bruce Wayne, dude, no, Bruce Wayne. And he's like, you know, trying to play it off, but I just wasn't comfortable with the characters just starting off. And I'm pretty good at starting at an origin story and going from there, especially with, like, you know, Ultimates and stuff like that, alternate Earths and multiverses and whatnot. But this one, because I just couldn't relate to it. I just didn't care enough to continue wanting to read more, but I feel like I'm going to be forcing myself to. But it could be just me. I mean, when you guys read it yourselves, you'll obviously formulate your own opinions and can maybe speak about it, but that's just how I'm feeling. A couple other disappointments that I've been reading. The Walking Dead. I'm kind of over it. The stories seem outlandish. They're really short. It seems like a more letter hacks. You know, after the end of the book, the letter columns and stuff seem to be expanding while the story is actually getting shorter. I can actually feel Robert Kirkman being overworked and being busy when I'm reading these things, and I'm just not interested anymore. I'm not invested anymore. Same with Invincible. It feels like Invincible should have ended maybe 10 issues ago, and I would have been fine with that. But the fact that it keeps going and they keep trying and all these new stupid things that keep coming up, and now they're even recycling bad guys. So bad guys are now showing back up claiming to be clones. You know, it feels like a shortcut to me. It feels like Kirkman's tired. Like he's got too much on his plate and he just can't focus on what he's doing anymore. Hmm. So.
And it's interesting that you say that because they're going into their big 10-year anniversary of the comic. So, I mean, there's going to be a big push to be continuing to write that this year.
Right. Or at least meet that 10-year anniversary and maybe end it at that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just wasn't interested in it. I still read it because I'm a fan. I'm hoping it gets better. I'm curious about where the storyline is going. But it's so played out. You know, and yeah, same like I said with Invincible too. I don't care as well. Invincible for me was like the best superhero comic. It was a breath of fresh air when I first read it, just because the over the top violence, the big plot twists and turns and everything in it. But now I'm like, okay, really? Are we still? It's 108 issues. Aren't you done yet? Like it feels like it's run its time. It's run its course. I have been continuing to read Revival. I'm loving that book. I seriously consider you guys should read it because it's an awesome book. Powers, the Bureau. I'm just loving the fact that Bendis obviously isn't too busy. They can finally put this out on a monthly basis and it's consistently good. And with Walker finally like, dude, I got Powers, deal with it. And so that's really awesome and I'm happy with that. The book that's really catching me by surprise that I'm just flabbergasted at is Guardians of the Galaxy. This book is fucking awesome. It just restarted. It's only on issue 4. And it's just, the storyline got me, the actions got me, the characters got me, and it seems like they're doing their best to spark interest going into the movie. So that by the time the movie comes out, you already know about these characters, you already invested in them. They've even inserted Tony Stark, Iron Man, into the storyline to where he's traveling with them, so that he can get used to space travel and see what's going on out here and improve his armor while on the fly. Mm-hmm. And within the first 2 issues, they've already invaded Earth, got kicked out of Earth, told to fuck off, and is not that allowed back into Earth anymore.
Wow.
So, and they're dealing with that. And Rocket Raccoon is the man.
Yes.
Every time he kills somebody, he's like, murdered you, bam. Murdering you, bam. Murdered, bam. So it's kind of awesome. I'm really digging it.
Rocket Raccoon is an awesome character.
Yeah.
Always has been.
Now, do you see them writing it as a Because the first issue that I, when I read that, I felt like they were writing it to write the movie. Like, it was, like, you know, they
yeah,
know
good,
these characters.
It was a good reboot point, but also the first issue was a flashback.
Because
it was more of an origin story to get you acquainted with the Earth character, Peter Quill, I think that's his name, Star-Lord. But, you know, it picks up in issue two from present time.
Okay.
So, you know, you just go from there, and seeing as how he's the son of the intergalactic ruler, and, you know, they have this council where, like, you know, the Brood shows up, and Annihilus shows up, and all these other rulers of their own special parts of the galaxy show up, and now they're all plotting against, it's like a big, it's like Ron, you know, big throne room plot going on behind the scenes and stuff, and with fucking awesome action, and Groot. Groot is also pretty awesome. He's Hordor. Just, I am Groot, and he destroys everything in his path. But, so, like, I'm really surprised by it, because when I originally read it back in the day, I just didn't care. It just didn't appeal to me. And then when I tried to get into it when the Annihilation series had come out, the only reason I did read it was because of its tie-in to Annihilation, turning Galactus into a solar-powered, you know, power source. Just blew me away, you know. But so now I'm reading it. It's pretty awesome. And another book I've been see all the bad thing is all these books nowadays, everything that's come out is either dealing with the Infinity Glove or Thanos, one way or another. And again, I think it's prepping for the movies that are coming out, trying to give people an explanation as to who that weird chin guy was at the end of Avengers.
By letting us see him in high school?
Dude, I stopped reading that one. I didn't even bother with that one. But in the latest Avengers, they had this. There's a lot going on in this latest Avengers. It's hard to hold on to. And the same with Ultron. Ultron had like a little mini-series going on where the Avengers were trying to go back in time and kill Henry Pym so that Ultron didn't take over the world like he has been. The world got fixed, and somehow it shifted over and caused a seismic event to introduce Angela from Spawn as a character in the Marvel Universe, and flashed over real quick to show Miles, the Ultimate Spider-Man, the new guy, bumping into or seeing the appearance of Galactus showing up in the Ultimate Universe. So whatever time paradox that they created just now got fixed, but created other paradoxes going on in multiverses and other life forms in alien universes. So it feels like they're really putting a lot of shit on their plate, and all they have is a pair of chopsticks, and they just don't know how to get through it. You know, so I'll keep reading it because that's what I do, but I don't know how much I enjoy it. On the flip side, God, what was the other book I read? I don't remember anymore. I'm lost. Ultimate X-Men. I don't even know about that book anymore. I have no idea who these people are or what's going on in it, and none of it makes sense. It feels like they keep trying to reboot the series and reboot the series, and in the meantime, forgetting what the series was originally about or who was in the original series, and now it's just all clusterfucked, and it's just too confusing to try and follow who these people are or what they're doing anymore. The one series that is really, really pissing me off is Avengers Arena.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who don't know, Avengers Arena is Arcade has created Murder World and has gathered all these little B players, you know, the Teenage Avengers and the Teenage X-Men and all that stuff, and brought them in to Murder World and said, okay, fight. Whoever wins, you get the grand prize. A.K.A. Battle Royale, A.K.A. Hunger Games, A.K.A. Lord of the Flies. And they even stole graphics from Battle Royale.
Great.
Just stole them. So here, my problem is, if you're going to steal and create a comic book based off of all these obvious influences of movies that are uber-violent and have multiple deaths, I'm not hearing that in issue 11 only 4 people have died out of the 30 characters you have in here. It makes no sense. They side love stories, side plot lines, side cliques developing, stuff like that, and there's no real violence, no real murder happening. It's supposed to take place within 30 days, and whoever's still alive at the end of 30 days he gets forced to kill everybody else, you know, so there's only one winner. They're on day 25, 80% of the cast is still alive. and X-23 is, like, not doing anything. Like, you've got Wolverine's fucking clone in there with it that can kill everybody in a heartbeat, and she's just floating around like, oh, I'm stoned kind of today. So the story's not making any sense to me. If you're gonna copy uber violent movies and uber violent storylines,
yeah.
That's what I expected when I got into this book. That's why I picked up the book. Obviously, A, because it's ripping off Battle Royale, which if you haven't seen, you need to watch that movie because it's fan fucking tastic. But
it's kind of shitty.
Huh?
The third one's kind of shitty.
Yes. But if you take the violent scene from Hunger Games, where they unleash the kids on each other and make it so that everybody violently dies and has neck collars that explodes if they try to take it off or are in the wrong zones, that's Battle Royale. And if you're going to steal that storyline and put it into a comic book, I expect deaths. I expect at least one death an issue, at the very least, and big bloody battles and more in-depth storyline than what they're giving me. And so far, it just feels like fluff piece. It feels like a safe.
It's Marvel, though. It's
right, but I mean, I've seen violence with Marvel before,
yeah.
And this is just not it. When I first picked up the book, I was thinking, well, this is a good way for them to flesh out the weak characters they have in the Marvel universe and come up with a good strong one and then implement it into another story, X-Men, Avengers, what have you. Which, again, I'm seeing X-23 in here, who's a big, major character, one of the very few characters that actually have been created in a cartoon before implemented into the comic book world, but still a very strong character in itself, and she's not doing anything.
That's perfect. It's a perfect pilot or a perfect place to flesh her out and make her
right
a more relevant character, because they honestly, she's been just kind of floating around in limbo, like, in general.
Right, and you don't, I just don't care. She's one of my favorite characters. Her and Daken have taken over my love for Wolverine and Deadpool. They're now my favorite characters. And they've killed Daken off and are now trying to think of a way to bring him in, and have tamed X-23. So it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And she was such a strong character in the beginning, and just stuff I've read recently is, it's frankly, it's just boring. It's
right.
Like, very uninteresting, which they kind of did to Wolverine for a while, too. It's just, like, she was such a hard edge, like a throwback of how Wolverine was, to the point where Wolverine was trying to calm her down, and then she just got boring.
Like, yeah, it's like,
boring.
She had a series called NYX, and that was awesome, where it showed her how she was raised and how she was cloned and then how she became a hooker because she was brainwashed and all this other stuff going on. I look at Martin when I say hooker. She was implemented into the new relaunch of X-Force. That was the Assassin Squad, where she was just awesome in that series, a perfect member of the team. And then Wolverine got I don't want her to be around murder anymore, so I'm just going to let her go free. Be a free spirit, discover yourself.
She became a hippie.
And then it got boring, you know. So I really wish they would do something with her.
Yeah, that character has a large amount of potential, just mostly because they've kind of beat that dead horse.
Right.
But you can go back with it. All the cool stuff that you could, like, say you want to do with Wolverine, you could do with her.
Her and Daken. I mean, yeah. Daken.
Yeah. I love Daken.
Yeah.
that still pisses me off.
And, yeah, so. Anyway, there you have it. Those are the books that I've been reading lately. Nothing really too new. But, yeah, I reread R.I.P.D. to get prepped for the movie. Don't see the movie as being any relevance to the book.
Just nothing new for movies we've seen.
Right. However, in that course, though, I was really impressed with World War Z. For those of you that don't listen to the Midnight Movie Maniacs, I really liked World War Z, and I didn't think I would, because it didn't really pertain to the book at all, aside from characters and overall storyline. But I really dug it, especially when I read the alternate ending, which I would have liked to have seen. I think they saved it. Once I liked the ending, but then I read the alternate ending that they had shot, and I was like, oh man, that would have been way more violent. That would have been awesome.
But I still need to see it. Kind of interested in seeing it now.
Surprisingly, I liked it. Well, I think that'll wrap up the show for us. Martin, Richard, did you have anything you guys wanted to add before we left?
See you guys next time.
you can see him?
Yeah.
Through a podcast?
Uh-huh.
You got skills.
He's magic that way.
Mental.
You're mental?
Yeah.
All right, so that wraps up episode 116, and we will catch you guys next time. Please tune into the Midnight Movie Maniacs podcast that we do on a weekly basis, where we see movies and talk about them.
At midnight.
At
podcast?
Midnight. Right. All right, guys, well, we'll see you next time.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.